From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of June 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And then a bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Mike Tenorum of T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online to discuss the weather forecast that's been driving the marketplace. He's looked forward and back, says, wow, it's dry. We know that. And wow, it's going to stay dry. We probably know that as well, but we need all the details to give ourselves some better basis for marketing and what might be happening into the future. We'll take a look at all of that today on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn settled down a penny and a half at 592.5 today. September up 8 at 524.25. And December new crop 8.25 higher at 530. July beans 29.75 higher, settled 1329.5. The August up 26.25 at 1244. And November new crop at 1169 up 22.5 cents. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net is here now to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm having a good day here. Earlier in the day, and last night actually too, about 10 o'clock, I had a tenth of rain here in Champaign County. This was probably just really localized in Mahomet as I looked over the radar. And again today, it started, about 40 minutes ago. You and I are recording about 25 after the hour of 1 o'clock. So this time around, I think I've gotten a pretty good rainfall out of that. But these are really hit-and-miss showers, and they are mostly miss. I know if you look to the west, there certainly isn't anything. And I think down your way, only an hour to the south of us, in the Mattoon area, that things are dry too.
Yeah, we haven't had anything here. It's definitely dry as a bone. You hear about these pop-up showers, and it's definitely one of those deals where, maybe a couple, 3% of the state gets measurable rainfall, but those that get it are certainly smiling like it's going out of style. But, it's not absolutely, panic time yet, but the thing that bothers me about what's going on here is that a lot of this early corn is entering that time, and it's setting ear size, and we're going to have a lot of stress over this weekend for those of us that miss these little pop-up showers.
And I will say this, that I know the agronomist well enough, Emerson Nafziger, that we can take some of the stress, and the ear size is one thing, but short corn, and we're going to hear about it, I almost guarantee it, later in the year, doesn't mean as much maybe as you might think. It's just a lack of rainfall during the vegetative stage, which we're in, and that won't mean so much. So just something that when I hear about it later, if you talk about it, I'll probably remind you at that point that Emerson doesn't think so much about that. However, it is a problem across not only Illinois, but parts of Indiana, Ohio, other places. The Western Corn Belt appears that Iowa has been getting pretty decent rains as of recent, and certainly Nebraska, parts of the Dakotas, Minnesota as well.
Yeah, a lot of the Western Corn Belt's doing all right. I'd say Iowa, a little more localized, than everyone else west of them, but certainly a little better coverage than what Illinois is seeing. But, you're in that Des Moines area, and they've had a fair amount of rain right in there, but it's just kind of sat on top of them. So, again, I think this time of year, you certainly want to see the chance to root down a little bit. But the tough thing for, a lot of us, in some of these areas that are super dry is that, you're stressing yourself just a little bit, maybe more than what a lot of us would like to see. Now, I do know that there's varying degrees of thoughts as far as what's going to happen if you stress us at this time. It's V6, V7, V8 area for us anyway. We have seen yield impacted with stress at that time. So, I don't know. It's not the end of the world by any means. If you end up with a bunch of 14s and 16s, but you have a ton of rain in August, you're still going to have one heck of a corn crop. But you might not see near the 18s and 20s that we saw last year.
kind of a big, wide trading range in soybeans. They were the ones that really started to push back. What happened in that marketplace today?
Oh, just very oversold. That bean market so oversold coming into today. You know, even after today, you know, most of your RSIs are still awfully oversold. You know, I believe you look at, for instance, no beans and it's 35. You know, yesterday we were talking in the 20s, and so yeah, I think this market was awfully oversold. You get in a bit of a situation where yes, you've got bearish fundamentals whenever it comes to soybeans. You've got beans coming into the U.S. Bought from Brazil. There's a lot of different reasons to be a little bit bearish, but at the same time, you know, you've still got what you would call, you know, a situation where Argentina pulled a lot of those Brazilian beans their way. And I think whenever you get China continued to be talking about a little more imports into China for soybeans than what the USDA was planning on, it shows you that that world balance sheet may not be quite as loose as what some folks are talking. So, you know, I don't want to say that I'm bullish beans, but I think a bounce in here makes some sense. I just think that a producer needs to pay very close attention. If we do start getting rain, I can see this bean market, unfortunately, continue on the trajectory we've seen over the last several weeks.
I made note that nearby corn did not rally along with new crop. Is that a bad sign for those still holding on to old crop corn?
Well, I think there's a fair amount of spread unwinding that went on here today. You know, I do also think that there's a fair amount of corn that's people are kind of shopping it around, and they're saying, hey, if we do get a rally in here, you know, obviously you come in today with a nice rally. Yesterday you bounced off of the lows that we saw. I mean, yesterday, I'll tell you, was a pretty big day because, you know, we were down 14, 15 cents in this corn market, and you close, you know, July unchanged, and you look at some of the deferred contracts only down 2, 3, 4 cents. And so one heck of a performance yesterday. You come in today and you're a little bit higher. Well, the thing that we saw, of course, is some spread unwinding. I think some of these people that were super panicked yesterday about cash prices decide they better get some offers in, and maybe they'd be able to sell some corn on some strength. So, you know, I think moving forward, July corn, this $6 is probably going to be a good over-under. A lot of it's going to depend on the weather, of course, because I think you'll drag cash corn higher if you continue to put a little bit of premium back in this D's corn.
Is there going to be more upside potential in the overnight and day trade the rest of the week, which is only Friday?
Oh, you know, here's the thing. I mean, if you have similar forecasts that it's going to be a good 10 days out as far as some of this rain it goes, and, you know, maybe you're only going to get an inch or whatnot, then I think it's going to be tough to go home with a short bias tomorrow. Now, obviously, we've got several runs between now and the close tomorrow, but I just have to think that it's going to be really tough to expect a big down day here at the end of the week unless you would, for instance, maybe see widespread rain today instead of just pop-up showers. I don't know that that's in the cards, but, you know, we are certainly setting up for an extremely volatile Sunday night market. Because, you know, it's early in the year to be talking this way, but by all means, this weather is going to either change to a more active environment or it's not. And I think we're going to find that out within the next week to 10 days.
Thank you much.
Oh, absolutely.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with logistics. West Coast ports in the United States started negotiating a new labor contract just about a year ago, and while working without a new contract in place is not unheard of, the contract has now been expired for over 10 months. A report from the U.S. Meat Export Federation says the labor uncertainty is having an impact on red meat exports. There are a lot of questions, says CEO Dan Holstrom of USMEF. He says the federation thinks that the labor uncertainty is having an impact on those red meat exports, and it all surrounds the West Coast ports. Those ports, he says, are vital starting point for a large number of our shipments to Asia. The Long Beach and L.A. ports shut down in mid-April and were followed by further disruptions later that month. He says USMEF is seeing a reduction in imports and some discretionary cargo is getting diverted away to ports in the Gulf of Mexico and the East Coast. He simply says this is not good news for the meat industry. We'll stay with ports for just a moment. The Ocean Shipping Reform Implementation Act is designed to help with slowdowns and other issues at U.S. ports. The OSRIA follows the Ocean Shipping Reform Act passed last year. The first bill gave the Federal Maritime Commission the power to address the actions of foreign carriers, leaving U.S. ports empty and not carrying American goods back home. The new Reform Implementation Act clarifies the FMC's role and focuses attention on shipping exchanges. The goals are to streamline port logistics, reduce disruption, and address the influence of Chinese companies on shippers' operations. U.S. ports are also prohibited from using Chinese state-sponsored software. The FMC can now investigate foreign shipping exchanges like the Shanghai Shipping Exchange to prevent improper business practices. A report from Supply Management says the sponsoring legislators point out it gives the FMC the authority to protect U.S. ports, shippers, and manufacturers from Chinese influence. Let's switch gears now. A study from the Minnesota State Agricultural Centers of Excellence says using water quality practices on the farm has financial benefits. For the fourth year in a row, farmers enrolled in the state's agricultural water quality program had higher profits than those that were not. More than 100 farms enrolled in the water certification program throughout the state. 43 of the state's 87 counties were represented. And on average, water quality certified farms brought in $23,500 more than the non-certified farms, or about a 7.5% increase in profits. Keith Olander says it clearly states the case for water quality certification. He says this is because we're also doing this with cover crops, and we want to carry that forward and see where the environmental metrics go to help farmers with their decisions. And finally today, something else related to the climate. Global Clean Energy Holdings and USDA have signed a contract for the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities grant for their Climate Smart Camelina project. One note, I'm going to have to look up exactly what the crop camelina is. We'll get back to that sometime later. Now that that agreement is signed, by the way, work can officially begin on the $30 million project to measure and validate the advantages of camelina as an ultra-low carbon non-food renewable fuel. The project will implement, measure, and validate the advantages of camelina in both rotational and winter crop production systems. The goal is to accelerate farmer adoption of camelina grown to produce feedstocks for renewable biofuels and chemicals without causing land use change and while increasing carbon capture in the soil. A Climate Smart Camelina will also support market development to provide additional revenue streams for growers and provide a premium for this low carbon intensity crop. Of course, I will follow up to see what we can figure out about camelina. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Here's a story about the debt deal that is being struck in Washington, D.C. and likely to make its way to the president's desk. It may mean that there's a little less money for the Farm Bill and force a reshuffling of funds to meet farmer needs. A 3% increase in defense spending, a boost in veterans benefits, and an effective spending freeze for fiscal 2024 could dash hopes of many farm commodity groups to up supports. That is according to longtime Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
It looks to me like it's going to be difficult to up funding in a lot of areas. It doesn't mean that there won't be some up funding in some areas, but it's going to be at the expense of other areas in the Farm Bill.
And Grassley adds that any new Farm Bill spending would have to be offset by savings in other government agencies.
There could be, just hypothetically, let's say money going to the Agriculture Department coming from EPA or from Interior.
The GOP says is also looking to increased SNAP work requirements for savings And House Ag Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson denounced a Congressional Budget Office estimate that the debt deal would add $78,000 to SNAP rolls by exempting some.
Veterans, homeless, and those aging out, foster youth, they're largely already counted. They're already eligible. They're already baked into the baseline for the Farm Bill.
But even if CBO is wrong that SNAP spending will increase by more than $2 billion over 10 years, Grassley says they and appropriators will have the last word, not the ag committees.
Now, we could be higher in authorization, but the appropriators can't go above this agreement that's been reached between McCarthy and the president.
With that reality in place, Farm Bill spending could be still squeezed, making it harder to meet producers' safety net demands. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media Online. Anytime you'd like to listen at willag.org. And don't forget, we'll post our Commodity Week program there by about 6 o'clock this afternoon. It's all at willag.org. Let's check in now with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather. Thank you, Mike, for being with us. You can always find him, by the way, at tstorm.net online. Let's begin with maybe the dryness we've had. Do we have any stats about what this looks like at this point?
Yeah, we certainly do. If you look at the 7-state Corn Belt, which basically are the states surrounding Illinois and including Illinois, it was the driest April and May since 1992. And the records that we're dating go back to 1960, and it was the fourth driest of that period, with only 1980, 1988, and 1992 having been drier. So this was an unusual dry spell that we've been through, and it's continuing at the moment.
When you take a look forward, will it move up in the stats list, do you suppose? I guess I'm asking about the forecast and what it really means.
Well, if we end up having normal rainfall for the month of June across the Corn Belt, it would still end up at around number 12 driest since 1960. With any departures to the dry side, increasing the level of dryness and basically making us end up in the top 5 to 10 driest from April through June on record. So we are flirting here with some records that we really don't want to be touching. The one record that we will not be able to touch, though, is 1988. Even if it doesn't rain for the rest of the month, it would still end up being a little bit wetter than 1988. So this situation is not as severe as that one, but every other year other than that is, you know, has a chance to be broken if we end up being drier than normal in the month of June. In fact, Todd, if we look at the coverage of 60-day dryness on U.S. corn production, right now it's the driest of any day in the growing season going back through at least 2014. So pick any day you want going back 9 years. And there's never been higher coverage of dryness when measured over the last 60 days as today, not only for corn, but for soybeans too. So it just gives you an idea of what's going on here and that we really needed to start raining, because until it rains heavily across a wide area, all these statistics are going to still be in play, and they really can't be in play a few weeks from now, or else we'll have to start talking about yield losses.
Clearly today, there are pop-up storms. I suppose these are small ones in the eastern Corn Belt. Can you talk about those and what the western Corn Belt looks like?
Yeah, well, we're certainly going to see some storms like this over the next few days in the Corn Belt. So it's not going to be 100% dry, but you need to keep in mind that in general, about 75% of rainfall in the central U.S. in the summertime is driven by nighttime thunderstorm clusters, not these storms that we're seeing today. These are pop-up variety storms. They hit here, they miss there, and they happen in the afternoon. We need those big thunderstorm clusters that line up at nighttime and then really get going and, you know, wake you up with big cracks of thunder in the middle of the night. That's what really gets central U.S. rainfall totals up there. So this is, you know, helpful, but it's not changing the overall picture, because we really need to get about a tenth to two-tenths of an inch of rain almost every day at this time of the year across an entire Corn Belt region. So a couple of pop-up thunderstorms while helping out the producer who's located underneath it, you know, that doesn't change the overall picture for the Corn Belt. Now, as we move forward, we have a couple of things to consider. Number one is that we have upper-level high pressure in place today, and that's part of the reason that it's so warm. And that's not going to change dramatically over the next 5 days. That's also going to keep these thunderstorms relatively disorganized. So we'll see a few more over the next few days, but we are unlikely to see a major thunderstorm cluster roll through the Corn Belt. That takes us into early next week. Once we're in early next week, the cool front is going to pass, and that will drop temperatures back down to normal the way it looks at the moment. As that front moves through, a few storms will form here and there. But again, that front is not going to be driving into a super muggy air mass. And because of that, we'll just see some thunderstorms here and there, and then another dry period once we get into later next week. So now we're all the way out to next weekend, 7 to 10 days from now, and we'll really need it to rain a lot if everything holds true. There's always a chance that you could get this great setup for big nighttime thunderstorm clusters and all that. We've seen that in the past. But everything that we're looking at today suggests that we're going to see this relatively dry air mass in place. We'll see a couple of systems move through. We'll see some storms here and there. And while there might be some benefit to different parts of the Corn Belt, it's unlikely that everybody is going to benefit at the same time. So the story is probably going to still linger in some fashion, even if we do get some of those storms in 10 to 14 days. And that's really what everybody's going to be focusing on who's paying attention to corn and soybeans. What does weather look like 10 to 20 days from now? Because everybody's going to know pretty soon that you'll need rain. And if that rain comes to fruition, then this will just be a little bit of a scare in the start of the 2023 growing season. But if it doesn't rain, then all of a sudden it'll be a different story.
I know it's difficult. Is there any indication of what the end of June might look like, or are we just in a wait and see mode?
Well, we're just in a wait and see mode. I mean, you know, you just always have to be a little bit careful because, you know, on the one hand, if you look at these models, they've been showing some pretty good rain 7 to 10 days into the future, pretty much every day for the last couple of months. And during that entire time, we ended up being the driest in 31 years across the Corn Belt. None of the models were showing anything like that. So they're all still showing these rain chances out there in the future. But, you know, at some point you have to say to yourself, well, you know, is this really happening or is it not? And so we're always going to be cautioning to the side that this is not happening just because that's the history of this pattern. And with iffy rain chances out there, you know, you really need to have a great chance of rain and a great setup. It needs to be really obvious to start thinking that there's going to be a big change. And for something to be really obvious when you're forecasting weather, you have to be 3 days out or less. So this is not going to suddenly change. Even if it starts to look wetter, you always will be, at least I will always be a little suspect. And I'll certainly be keeping my client suspect of that rain event until it's right in front of us. So this story isn't going to end real soon, even if it does start to look wetter, which again, today, it doesn't look super wet.
Hey, thank you much, Mike.
Yep, thanks for having me, Todd.
Indeed, that's Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. You may find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There we post our daily radio programming. Just click and play from the website or hit the podcast tab to subscribe to our podcast. Those include the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, which we'll record this afternoon, post by about 6 o'clock this evening, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy Podcast, all at willag.org under the podcast tab, or you can search any of them out you'd like in your favorite podcast application. On our website, you'll also find information from the agricultural economist, the Farm Doc team, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.